We greet you in the name of our risen Lord. Our theme this afternoon is threats to brotherhood assist brotherhood sharing. My subject, of course, relates to the Social Security exemptions. I've got mixed emotions here this afternoon. A couple things against me. Number one, it's afternoon, after lunch, last speaker. That gives a little more of a challenge for a person to keep everyone's attention. I suppose if you have no interest in this, you can take a nap. And if you do have an interest in it, though, I do. I would suggest that you at least remember me in prayer as I share with you. My wife's advice was don't talk too fast. She knows me pretty good. And sometimes when I'm trying to beat the clock, I tend to get her in high gear, and I don't want to do that this afternoon. So if you see my wife raising her hand like that, you'll know what she means. She's trying to slow me down. Well, let me say this. I do believe that if we as conservative Mennonites, if we lose our Social Security exemption, it is going to be a threat to our brotherhood sharing. I really think it will. As a brotherhood, I think we need to teach. We need to preach. We need to encourage our brethren and sisters to hear subjects like Peter Martin's going to share tonight on biblical basis and practice of brotherhood assistance. I believe that if we do not rise to the challenge of practicing brotherhood assistance, our members will feel pressured. We'll feel pressure to enroll in insurances, including the Social Security system. I wish I knew a little bit more about you. I have a question that I'd like to ask every employed, self-employed, whether you're an employee or whether you are self-employed. In other words, everyone that has a job today. I like to find out something about you. I like for everyone to close their eyes right now. Close your eyes. No peeking. I would like to know if you are employed or self-employed and are Social Security exempt. You have filed a Form 4029. Raise your hands. Thank you. Now, those of you that are either an employee or self-employed and are not Social Security exempt, raise your hands. Put them down. Thank you. I see we have quite a mixed group this afternoon. I wasn't really sure until I came out here what your local situation is. And let me say this. The last thing that I want to do is to create a controversy about this subject. But I would say this. I think the Bible does give us some teaching. And I think there's some warnings for us. And I think there's some things that maybe we could be helped by. But the first thing we need to do is understand what the subject is that we're talking about. I'm going to give, as Ms. mentioned, hopefully we'll have some time for questions. My goal is to cover the subject so thoroughly that you have no questions. We'll see how well I get that done. But I'm sure there's probably some things that you may come in your mind. And we could take the questions as we go along, but the thing is that I may be covering some of that anyway later on, so I'm going to suggest you just hold your questions, write them down if you will, and we'll try to cover them at the end. Let me just tell you where we're going to go this afternoon, so you have an idea. I like to define Social Security, first of all, very briefly. And then I like to consider six questions. This will be the scope of our afternoon's consideration. Six questions. Number one, who can be exempt from Social Security? What are the requirements for a church to be exempt? You have to have a church to be exempt before the individual can be. What are the requirements for the church to be exempt? Number three, what are the requirements for an individual to be exempt? Four, when does a 4029 exemption, the Social Security exemption, become effective? On what time? When you file it? How soon is it effective? Number five, when should you revoke a Social Security exemption? And number six, how do you revoke it if you feel you need to or should? Let's first of all start by defining Social Security. It is a government plan. It's a government plan that's primarily set up for three primary purposes. Number one, you have Social Security payments being paid to those that reach, they call it retirement age. I don't know what that is. I know what 62 is. I'm past there. 64. You can either start collecting at 62, I believe it is, with a little lesser amount, or you can wait till 64 and then you collect at a higher amount. Monthly payment from there on, based on somewhat, you know, what you paid in. The more you paid in, the more you get back. That's number one. Number two, Social Security also covers disability payments. If you are become disabled mentally or physically, you're not able to work, you're under age 62, you can then receive disability payments. Number three, you also have survivors benefits for minors. For example, if your father would have passed away while you were a minor, under 18, your mother could have received benefits on your behalf based on your father's Social Security exemption. I mean, based on his what he paid in Social Security. So minors, there's payments to the mother, let's say, for that minor. That's part of the benefits, one of the benefits of the Social Security, survivor's benefits for minors. When you get 18, then it stops. It is the government's effort to take care of the less fortunate. And of course, to fund the Social Security, employers, employees, and the self-employed need to pay into the fund. The self-employed person pays in approximately 15% of their net profits, up to a certain limit. And while there is nothing inherently evil with the Social Security system, I think it is a real blessing that the government has extended the opportunity for the conservative Amish and Mennonite people to elect to be able to be exempt from the Social Security system. There's a sense in which the government is really attempting to do what Bible-believing Christians already do, practice among each other. 1 Corinthians 12:26 says that, and whether one member suffer, all the members suffer with it. The original Greek word there for suffer means to experience pain jointly or to sympathize. In other words, when one person has an issue, a problem, we're there to help them, to sympathize with them, maybe even helping them with their financial needs. There is a responsibility that each of us have toward each other. That's the Bible commands it already. Now the government, by using Social Security, is attempting somewhat to do that. I'm not saying the government's Christian by any means, but they at least recognize the need of helping those that are less fortunate. Well, we as Christians, we've known that long already. Do unto others, you should have them do unto you. There's all kinds of scriptures you can look at that help us to understand the responsibility we have as Christians to each other. Galatians 6:10. As we therefore have opportunity, let us do good to all men, especially unto them that are of the household of faith. We have an increased responsibility in the brotherhood. Now, why would we favor a brotherhood sharing plan over a government plan? There's a number of reasons come very quickly to our mind. Number one, it costs less to administrate a church plan than it does a government plan. Government programs come at a cost. In fact, at a rather exorbitant cost. The larger the system, the less efficient it is, and the more money it costs to operate it. What I'm really saying is that when you put money into a government program, it's like you put it in the funnel at the top when it's big, but what comes out at the bottom is so little. So much of it gets lost based on the overhead, salaries, corruption. A lot of its corruption gets lost through the whole system. So that means that what it costs a whole lot more to get an end product out of a government program, it costs a whole lot more to put in than what you're ever going to get out of it. Just the nature of it. Another reason I would favor brotherhood sharing over the government plan, and that is that it encourages a brotherhood caring and sharing concept. It just does. There's something about feeling that, you know, walking beside and assisting someone that needs help. You have a blessing. There's a blessing in your heart that you receive when you have a brotherhood assistance offering. You know that this money is going to be used to help your brother. It actually feels good to give into the offering. I've never quite had the same feeling when I had to pay my taxes. There's just no overwhelming, you know, feeling of rejoicing that comes over my heart when I make write out that check. It just isn't there. Because, well, you know why. Also, it is not subject to arbitrary restrictions and limitations with every program. I don't care any insurance program you have. How many pages of fine print are there in insurance policies? I mean, it's many pages. Fine print, you can't hardly read it. It's all the exceptions, you know, act of God, terrorism, you know, all these things that depending on when it happens, how it happens, under one circumstance, you know, they have to get down to the deciding, well, now let's see, was this building destroyed by the storm? Or was it the snow load that finally, after the storm, it collapsed it? If it collapsed after the storm, it's not storm-related anymore. You know, it's a weight problem. And so they get out of that because it didn't happen while the storm was. Anyway, all kind of exceptions. Well, that's what you have with government-operated programs. A lot of arbitrary restrictions and limitations. Now, let's move right on to the next area, and that is who can be exempt from Social Security taxes. People that can be exempt today are the self-employed. Self-employed individuals or partners, general partners in a partnership, they can be exempt. Secondly, you can also have employees that can be exempt if the employer is also exempt. In other words, if you have a Form 4029 and you're an employee, your employer has to also have an approved Form 4029 or you can't be exempt. If it's a partnership, let's say you're an employee of a partnership where you have a couple of owners. Every one of those owners, every one of those partners in the partnership have to be exempt for any of the employees to be exempt. That's why you cannot be an employee of a corporation and be exempt from Social Security. You can have a 4029 exemption if you have a sideline business, a farm or something like that, and say, well, I don't have to pay self-employment tax on that. But you will still have off of your paycheck deducted Social Security as an employee of a corporation. Because why? The employer is a corporation. Corporations, they don't take communion. I mean, they're not members of a church. They don't qualify. So therefore, you don't have the employer being exempt. You also must be a member of an exempt church. A church that has met the qualifications so that its members can be Form 4029 exempt. You could be a millionaire. You could tell the government, look, I got plenty of money in my account. Don't worry about me for Social Security. I want to be exempt. Could Bill Gates be exempt from Social Security? No. He has enough money. Makes no difference. See, they give these exemptions based on the strength, based on the cohesion, based on the relationship of caring and sharing within the brotherhood. That's why they give it. You cannot get it on an individual for yourself. The concept is that you must belong to a church that will take care of you if you need help. Now, let's go right into what are the requirements for a church to be exempt. There are a few. Number one, the established tenets and teachings of the church must be to encourage its members to not accept public or private insurance and make payments in the event of death, that's life insurance, disability insurance, old age or retirement, that's Social Security, medical expenses, that's medical insurance. You'll notice that all of these insurances that I'm mentioning have to do with insurance on the body. Insurance on the body. It doesn't matter. Fire insurance, liability insurance, any kind of other insurances don't even come into play. There's no questions even being asked about that. Second point on this, and that is the church does not need to excommunicate members that have health insurance. What I'm really saying is not every church member needs to be Social Security exempt in order that the church can qualify as an exempt church. Example in point. When the Eastern Pennsylvania Mennonite Church became Social Security exempt, one of its bishops was actually collecting Social Security at the time they went for Social Security exemption. And there were some people that raised the question, whoa, do we qualify? You mean one of our bishops can be collecting Social Security? And the fact was, it didn't matter. Why? Because the church leaders, the rest of them, they said they could clearly identify how where they had a teaching program encouraging its members to be exempt, to utilize brotherhood assistance instead of looking to the church, instead of going back to Egypt. And I remember some of those messages. We had a lot of messages that we heard on that very thing. So having one of the bishops collecting Social Security, he paid in for years. He figured, might as well collect out. And there's some people that actually have a conviction of, well, I paid in, so therefore I'm going to at least collect out what I paid in. But I'm not going to collect more than that. I don't want to be a burden on government, but I'm willing to collect out what I paid in. Well, that's another issue. Number three, a church, in order to qualify for exemption for its members, must be able to provide and I'm going to give you a quote here, right out of off the Form 4029. By the way, I have Form 4029s, about 150 of them along. I knew I didn't have enough probably to get everyone. They're back on at the very back of the auditorium here. If you'd like to have a copy of a 4029 form, you can help yourself to it. I don't think we're going to bother passing them out this afternoon. I'm afraid if you do, you're going to spend 10 minutes reading the form and won't hear what I say. So I'm going to just quote some things. A church must, quote, provide a reasonable level of living for its dependent members. That's what a church has to do. In other words, it can't have old people, needy people, widows, orphans that are neglected and left to fend for themselves. No. The church must be able to prove that it takes care, that it provides a reasonable level of living for its dependent members. You need to be able to prove that you give assistance to the people I just talked about. Those that have medical expenses beyond their ability to be able to pay. It is permissible to have a church-operated medical assistance plan. You know, where you ask each member to pay in a certain dollar figure, a family, so much a month, as a means of, accumulating the funds you need so that you can pay 80% or whatever your plan would call for. That's okay. But actually, the church needs, by virtue of being exempt, needs to go beyond that. Because you could have somebody that you're paying 80% of their bill, because that's your plan, but you know what? They can't cover the other 20%. According to Scripture, you have a responsibility to that brother or sister anyway, whether the government asks you to do it or not. It should be. Number four, another requirement for the church to be exempt, and that is the church must have been in existence since December 31, 1950. Where did that date come from? That's the date they wrote in the law at the time. They said, look, any new churches from now on, if you have a group of people here in house that have been attending a Lutheran church, and they start studying their Bible, and they say, you know what, the Bible calls for us, and they organize, and they want to follow the Scripture, and they look, and they say, you know what, we ought to go for Social Security exemption too. Guess what? They can't get it. Cannot. You have to be able to prove that you have been in existence since 1950 or have come out of a group or come under the umbrella of a group that has been in existence since 1950. And that usually isn't too difficult because that's usually what happens anyway. You don't have many new groups just starting up. If you do, a lot of those groups that start up house churches, should I call them? A lot of them find themselves homeschoolers. Yeah, sometimes that's the way it starts. And then they start, and guess what? They gravitate toward those which, you know, look in the Scripture like they do and feel like they, you know, and they look for support. So guess what? That ends up being another charity church, right? I mean, it ends up being one of the remnant churches out there. And so I got to tell you that is, there's been a lot of churches, small groups that have actually come under the umbrella of charity. And as long as they're identifying with them, they actually come under and actually qualify to eventually get Social Security exemption. Either that or they come in line with, identify with any other groups that's been in existence since December 30th, 1950. Number five, the church also has to file Form 1458. I didn't bring one of those along. Yes, I did. Don't have it here with me. Form 1458. What is it? What is it? It's a very simple application. It basically goes down these requirements and says, prove to me, show me how you have been taking care of your members. Have you been taking care of your members? Have you been in existence since December 31, 1950? And it's a yes or no. And then give me examples of how you've taken care of people that had needs and that type of thing. As long as you can do all that, then you get approved as a church that is qualified. Once you have that approved, then any members of that church can also file a Form 4029. Now, I'd like to clear up a couple of misconceptions before I go any further. Remember I said the only types of insurance that are in focus has to do with insurance on the body. Anything else is okay. Workman's compensation. What about workman's compensation? What if you're working for an employer and you get hurt on the job? And he has workman's compensation for you that's going to pay your medical bill. Is it all right if you're Social Security exempt? The answer is yes. Why is that an exception? Here's why. Employers, by law, are required to have a safe place of employment. They are actually required to pay your hospital bill if you get hurt on the job. Most states will cover, will support this idea. That if you get hurt on the job and your employer does not carry workman's compensation insurance on you, they are responsible because it happened while they're on the job. So, since it's the employer's responsibility, or workman's comp if you bought that, to cover your expenses, that's okay. It's required by law. If you are injured in an automobile accident, I don't know what for coverage you have out here in back in Pennsylvania, we have self-insurance. We've been provided that church plans can have, you don't have to carry commercial insurance. But even if you do, and if your insurance company, or let's say it was somebody else's fault, and their insurance company is responsible for your hospital bill because you were injured, is that okay to accept that? And the answer is yes. Because there again, by law, they're responsible for your hospital bill. It's okay to accept that. That does not violate your Form 4029. Church-sponsored plans are okay. Health-sharing plans like Samaritan Ministries, or there's others out there that have, they're not necessarily under a church plan, but they're the sharing plans, and they understand they will also be permitted under the Obamacare as an exception. You can have that type of plan. Now, you're going to say, now wait, Galen, in the very front page of your Form 4029, it says, you are conscientiously opposed to accepting insurance benefits from any private or public insurance. How can you say that? All I can tell you is that is the way they are interpreting the law. All right? I got this information. Most of what I'm sharing this afternoon, I actually got years ago from Bill Sechrist. He was the head of the Social Security Exemption Division from the very beginning when it started. And a lot of this has developed over the years. And I got to tell you that some of what I'm telling you this afternoon, you will have a very difficult time Googling or going online and finding what I'm going to share with you, because it's more or less like administrative interpretations that they have come up with over the years. What are the requirements for you to be exempt? Number one, you have to be a member of an exempt group. We already talked about that. You may never have collected Social Security benefits. Now, what if you were a minor? Right. Talked about a minor. What if you were a minor? Your father passed away. Your mother collected Social Security benefits until you were age 18. Does that mean that you are doomed? You never could be exempt? The answer is no. They have a provision in the law that says if you and we can get the amounts from Social Security. If you take the amount that your mother received when you were a minor and you issue a check back to Social Security, that cleans your slate. Then you can still be exempt as long as you pay it back. And that has to be paid back before your 4029 will be approved. Let me deviate just a little bit. Do you have Medicaid out here? What for plan do you have here in Oregon for Medicaid? There's a federal Medicaid. Do you have something on the state? It doesn't make any difference. If you do, in Pennsylvania, let me tell you what Pennsylvania has. Pennsylvania has a Medicaid plan for lower-income people, people that don't have much money, low-income. If you go to the hospital and you're not able to pay the bill in full, you can sign up for Medicaid. Now, that's a problem. Because if you have Medicaid, that's acceptance of insurance. That's like not insurance. You're accepting of private care for medical, and that would violate your 4029. However, Social Security has told us, or let me back up a little bit. What's happened is that with self-pay, you have hospitals that will give you, 20%, 25%, maybe 50% discount for self-pay? Sometimes not that. Under Medicare and Medicaid, the government has done studies to determine what it really costs. That is not a $5 Tylenol pill that really only costs 25 cents. All right? They know that. I mean, there's no question. One of our members just recently went in the emergency room, just for a few hours. The emergency room, I just saw the bill right before I came out here. The emergency bill is over $5,000. Just for a couple of hours. The doctor bill that came in, sorry, was over $1,000. I got to tell you, it's part of the push for the federal government stepping in because they're trying to stop some of that overpricing, you'd think. So, what some people do when they qualify for Medicaid, they say, you know what? The government has done a study what it really costs to give medical procedures. So much for a broken leg, so much for every procedure. And the average comes out to about 20%. The actual cost of providing procedures in the hospitals is about 20% of what they normally bill for. In other words, if you have a $100,000 hospital bill, it costs a hospital roughly about $20,000. Why do they charge $100,000 and give you a 25% discount, make it look like you're really getting a big deal? Well, what they do is they're actually using the self-pay people, that's what I've been told, to help make up for the people they don't get paid at all for. All right. What some people do, the question is it okay for church members to sign up for Medicaid? Allow the Medicaid to pay the hospital bill. It's a predetermined rate. You don't have to adjust. I mean, you don't have to negotiate. Medicaid pays for it. And then you turn around and reimburse the state for whatever Medicaid paid. The reason I'm bringing that one in, that is being done. And I got to tell you, Social Security has approved it. They said that's okay. That does not invalidate your Form 4029 exemption. As long as you reimburse, it's the same situation as if you collected benefits when you were a child. Some people don't like that. I'm not saying you should or you shouldn't. I'm just saying that that does not throw out your 4029 exemption if you reimburse the state for what they would have paid. Coming back to the requirements if you want to be exempt, you must also file Form 4029 in triplicate, three copies, if you want to file for Social Security exemption. It has to be signed by your minister or bishop. Number four, another requirement for you to be exempt is you must be conscientiously opposed to accepting Social Security and all the other type of benefits, health insurance benefits, public or private insurance. I'd like to spend just a few minutes on this one because this is a major issue. I had a person recently that was in the lot for minister. Questioning him about... Anyway, it turned out in the examination that he's not Social Security exempt. He belongs to a church of his, but he himself is not. And the question was asked, why was he not Social Security exempt? Self-employed. Could be exempt. And he said, I just never felt comfortable. He said, that form says I am conscientiously opposed to accepting Social Security. He said, I just don't have those feelings. I really don't feel it's necessarily right or wrong. I just don't. And so he said, I just never felt right filing for exemption, because he felt smitten by signing a document that says he's conscientiously opposed. That was a major stumbling block. Let me ask you a question. What does that really mean? To be conscientiously opposed. How strong of a conviction do you need in order to say that you're conscientiously opposed to something? Must you be willing to die for that conviction? I don't think so. I think there's things that we have conviction for that if we were not allowed to do it by law, you'd swallow hard and you'd do it. There's some things we do. I'm trying to think of some good example of that. Things we do that we have conviction for, but we wouldn't. What about our Christian day schools? That's pretty strong. We should have a good, strong conviction for our Christian day schools. But if the government would come out and say, look, we're just not going to allow it anymore, you're going to have to send to public school, what would you do? Would you say, look, take my head off, I'm ready to die for this one? Is that what you would do? Or would you say, no, I believe I better stay here and help my children grow up right in spite of it? Or, there's other things like that that we may have strong feelings for, conviction for, but not necessarily die for it. So I don't think we necessarily have to be willing to sacrifice our life for something to be able to say that we're conscientiously opposed to something. What biblical principles, I'd like for you to think this one through with me. What biblical principles could we embrace that would allow us to say that we are conscientiously motivated to file the Form 4029 and be exempt from Social Security? In other words, are there various reasons that we could use to say, you know what? Yes, I'm conscientiously opposed to that system because I'd rather have this system. I think this is more biblical than this one. Therefore, I'm conscientiously opposed. Would I die for it? No, I wouldn't. But I'm not, I'm making that choice because I feel that there's a spiritual benefit in this plan rather than the government plan. Let me give you a couple suggestions of how a couple areas in which I believe a person could say that they are conscientiously opposed. They have a conviction for something, like filing the 4029, and why the reason would be. Number one, is Christian stewardship a biblical principle? I think it is. Yep, it is. Okay, we agree with that one. We understand the biblical imperative of being a good steward of our finances. Let me ask you the question next. If I could show you that if you would take 15%, same amount Social Security is, 15% of your profits, of your income or wages, if that would be paid, instead of paying in the Social Security system, if that would be set aside and put in an IRA or some other savings account, from the time you're age 20 until you're 65, and I could show you that the money that you'll get when you get 65 is actually more than what you would collect in Social Security. Plus, if you would need to pull that money out to help a brother that's in need, or for yourself, it's there to get back. Whereas Social Security, you can never do that. What you put in Social Security, you can't ask for a lump sum payout, can you? No. You're limited to so much a month until you die, and when you die, it stops. Unless you have a surviving wife, spouse, then it can continue on. Let me ask you this. If I could show you that from a financial standpoint, from a stewardship standpoint, it makes more sense to use this plan rather than this plan, could you have a conscientious basis solely on the finances in order to say, I would desire to be exempt from Social Security, I'm conscientiously opposed to that other plan? I think you could. I think you could make that argument. Or number two, think about brotherhood sharing. Could you be concerned that if we accept the government's cradle to the grave welfare system, socialistic system, which I tell you, we're on the sliding board, we're picking up steam all the time, it's becoming that. Could you be concerned that if we accept government cradle-to-the-grave welfare state, that we could lose the spiritual blessing and benefit of a caring and sharing brotherhood? Because now there's money, there's 15% of our funds that are going into something can't be used over here. Could we, on the basis of that, say we're conscientiously opposed to the Social Security system because we favor a biblical caring and sharing plan? I think you could. I think you could. What about the desire to be free from Obamacare? Could that be in itself a reason to be conscientiously opposed to and file for exemption? See, the Obamacare specifically exempts out people that are Form 4029 exempt. You don't have to pay the fine. You don't have to pay the tax. Would that in itself be a reason that you could be conscientiously opposed? I think you could. See, there are some people that take that Form 4029 and says, it says I'm conscientiously opposed. And they say, well, I don't know that I am. And so they feel guilty. They feel guilty signing it. I actually think, and I know, Social Security does not interpret that statement nearly as strongly as what some people tend to do. You might have questions on that. Let's keep moving. When does a Form 4029 exemption become effective? If you are self-employed, farmer, business person, and you file a Form 4029, that exemption is actually retroactive back to the date when you joined that church. It's on the form. It says, I've been a member of this church ever since a certain date. That is the date that it becomes retroactively approved to. That becomes really helpful, beneficial, when we run into IRS audits. IRS audits someone, and they self-employed, Social Security exempt. That's what it says on the form. And the IRS agent says, could you show me a copy of your approved Form 4029? We go to the taxpayer and say, could you give us a copy? I said, oh, that's been 20 years ago, 30 years ago. I have no idea where that paper is. And so they look. They can't find it. So we go to IRS, Social Security. We say, do you have a copy? Sometimes they find it. Guess what? Sometimes they don't. Because we have known, we've had people that have gotten approved Form 4029s back. Social Security has no proof of it. They lost their copy. All right. So what do? We immediately have the taxpayer fill out another Form 4029, get it quickly expedited through Social Security, get it approved. We can go back and give it to the IRS agent and say, here it is. And guess what? It's retroactive all the way back to when they first joined the church. So that's been very helpful. Now, that's a self-employed person. The rules are different for an employee. If you're an employee working for an employer, of course, he's also exempt. And you just now, let's just say you're starting your job Monday morning. That's going to be June the 10th. You're starting the job. You go into the employer. He's exempt. He says, are you exempt? Say, no, I'm not, but I want to be. Oh, okay. So you fill out a Form 4029 and you send it. When is that going to be approved? As an employee, Form 4029s are approved or exempt the quarter following the quarter in which it was filed. Let's see. The quarter following the quarter in which it's filed. This is the second quarter. This first, second quarter of June. It wouldn't be effective until July 1. So that means any wages paid between Monday and July 1, you have to withhold Social Security. Unless the employer tells the employee tells the employer, please don't give me any paycheques until after July 1. And then it's okay. It's not when you earn the money, it's when you get paid. Which means if you go in and start your job the beginning of July, you would tell him, please don't pay me until October 1. And then that's okay. Then they don't have to withhold Social Security. When should you revoke your Social Security exemption? There's a number of cases under which you should revoke it. Let me give them to you. Number one, if you transfer your church membership to a non-exempt church, a church that never filed for exemption, you transfer your exemption to them. Actually, on the Form 4029, it says very clearly about halfway down, it says, in the event I am no longer a member of the church described above, I agree to notify IRS within 60 days. So when you, if you Change your membership from an exempt church to a non-exempt church. Within 60 days, you're required to notify IRS that you're no longer exempt. Point number two, do not revoke your exemption if you're simply transferring your membership from one exempt church to another exempt church. It's not required, because then you're going from one exempt church to another one. Now, I got to admit, it gets a little gray. There's a little gray area here. Let's say you're no longer a member of an exempt church. Let's say this church was exempt. You leave this church, and you're church shopping. Checking around this church, that church. You're not sure right where you're going to finally, you know, which lily pad you're finally going to land on. Here's what Bill Sechrist told me. He said, if the member is continuing to practice his faith as before, following the basic tenets and teachings of the church group that he was with, and he intends to reestablish his membership with an exempt group, he does not have to revoke his exemption. How long can that go? I had one case when it was about 5 years. To me, that's stretching it pretty long. I don't think you can say 10 years later, I'm still thinking about it. I don't think so.